Bruce was stationed at Camp Pendleton, and when the war was over, it was so exciting. I mean, in Japan, because of course the war had ended in Europe first, and then there was the end of the war with Japan.
I received this afternoon a message from the Japanese government in reply to the message forwarded to that government by the Secretary of State on August 11th. I deem this reply a full acceptance of the Potsdam Declaration, which specifies the unconditional surrender of Japan. In the reply,
the battleship Missouri, 53,000-ton flagship of Admiral Halsey's Third Fleet, becomes the scene of an unforgettable ceremony marking the complete and formal surrender of Japan. In the Bay of Tokyo itself.
And peace came to the world. It came to the capital of this victorious nation. And it came to Berlin, capital of a defeated nation.
When the word came through, all the people that were in the military were kept on the base where they were stationed. They were not able to leave because they were afraid that if there were just too many people out running around, that they might have some problems. And anyway, that didn't last but a couple of days.
It came to the crowded city of the Golden Gate, and also to the deserted city of Hiroshima, Japan. The war was over for accident.
So Bruce got orders, and he got orders to, well, first he got orders to headquarters Marine Corps, and they decided that they had to work out some kind of a program to separate all these service people from the service. And Bruce and Homer Heyer and James Herbold were set up as a group of three to work this out, which they did. And then they worked out the plans in Washington. Then they were sent up to Port Deposit, Maryland, because there was the Bainbridge Training Center, which had been a boys' school before World War II, so that there were lots of facilities for people to stay.
The feeding, housing, and clothing of these men will be an expensive responsibility for years to come. But the more immediate problem is to return millions of servicemen and women to their homes. The most extensive troop movements ever to be undertaken by any nation have been underway since VE Day and will continue well into 1946.
So then he was a place where I was able to come. And Bruce was a major then, and he had a captain working for him whose wife was living in Santa Clara. And they had a car. I mean, it was impossible to buy a new car at that point. And it was very hard to find a second-hand one. Well, they had a second-hand Hudson. And so Bruce and David talked it over and decided that David's wife, Charlene, would drive the Hudson to the San Fernando Valley, where I was staying at the time, taking care of, excuse me, Bruce's cousin, Daryl, and his wife, Lorraine. Were both in the hospital, and they had a boy who was about 10, I think, at that time. They had two older boys, too. But they, and Daryl's mother was there, and she was very elderly. So they asked me to come and stay in the house and kind of take care of things. So I did that, and then, of course, when Bruce got orders, we worked it out so that I was able to leave. And Charlene came down from Santa Clara, picked me up, and we started late in the afternoon. We started for San Bernardino. And I didn't know how to drive, so I was going to learn so that I could spell Charlene as we went across country.
Oh, give me land, lots of land, under starry skies above. Don't fence me in.
So we drove the first day, or the end of the first day, staying in San Bernardino.
Don't fence me in.
And then we started out early the next morning, and we got over into Arizona, and it was just the end of the afternoon, and all of a sudden the car died.
Send me off forever, but I ask you please, don't fence me in.
And I knew nothing about cars, and neither did she. And we sat there and thought, and I had never met her before. I mean, this was the first time I had ever set eyes on Charlene Simmons. She was a very nice person, thankfully. So we decided we'd have to get out and stop a car. Well, the first car that stopped, these men got out and they looked like gangsters, but they were just as nice as they could be. Anyway, they said, well, there's a little town further on down called Peach Springs. This was south of the Grand Canyon. And so they said, we'll send a tow truck for you. Well, we waited and we waited, and it was beginning to get dark because this was in early November. And then all of a sudden, this clunkety, clunkety, clunkety old tow truck came down the road. And the man was very nice, the garage man, and he had a garage in Peach Springs. Well, come to find out, there were three white families and two businesses and 500 Hualapai Indians on the reservation, and that was Peach Springs.
Wow.
What had happened was that the bearings had burned out in the car. So we went into town, and there was a motel, and the motel had a kitchen. So we had dinner at the motel restaurant, and that night the cook quit, and there was no place in town to get any food. We looked at each other and thought, good heavens, what have we gotten into now?
I want a ride to the ridge where the west commences, and gaze at the moon till I lose.
So the next day, we set out to walk 18 miles down the road. I'm not exaggerating, 18 miles down the road to where there was supposed to be a roadhouse, you know. Well, while we were walking, a highway repair truck came along, and this man said, oh no, that restaurant's closed. But he said, there is a railroad camp the other way, and they have a kitchen, and you'll be able to get some food.
Country that I love, don't fence me in. Let me.
How far for the 18 miles did you end up walking?
Well, I really couldn't tell you how many, but we walked about 3 hours.
Wow.
So, and it was getting hot. So anyway, we went with this man, and we had a good meal, and he said, now, I'll pick you up every day and take you down to the railroad camp as long as you're going to be here. So we took the bus and we went east to the town, and I think it was Williams. We went east to see if we could locate some bearings. Well, there weren't any. So we went to the gas station where the bus was supposed to stop, and the bus company had gone on strike.
Oh.
So the man at the gas station said, well, I'll watch for a nice looking people in a car, and they'll take you back to Peach Springs, which is what happened. I mean, these were difficult times right after the war was over. You know, the whole country was on the move. So we went back to Peach Springs, and the man said, well, I think we're going to have to go down to Phoenix and get them poured. Charlene, of course, was a good driver, and he took his truck. And he drove the truck, and we followed him, and Charlene drove his car. And we got to Phoenix, and we had to spend the night. So we stayed in a motel, and he got the bearings poured. And the next day we went back, drove back, and we were young and lighthearted, and all of this was fun. You know, we weren't unhappy about it. It was fun. So we got back to Peach Springs. And there was a young mechanic who was working there, who was just a sort of an itinerant mechanic, and he was living in a trailer down in the ravine next to where the garage was. And in the meantime, we found that there was a government store that sold to the Indians, so we were able to buy some canned stuff and have canned fruit and things of that kind to kind of fill in between the going down to the railroad camp.
On my cayuse, let me wander over yonder till I see the mountains rise.
Well, The mechanic put the bearings in. The morning that we left, everybody in town was out waving us goodbye and wishing us good luck, because we'd been there long enough, so we talked to most everybody, you know. There were hardly any people in the town. But the cook at the restaurant still hadn't come back to work. I don't know, they must have had some kind of a falling out.
Papa, don't you fence me in.
So off we went down the road toward Albuquerque. And the first place, of course, that we had to go through was Tucumcari, and there was no place to stay. So we went to a garage that was open all night and the lights were all on, and we slept in the front seat of the car. And you might call it sleep. There wasn't much sleeping going on because it was just napping. And we were coming into Albuquerque when the car started to die.
Oh no.
It was just at sunset, and she was able to get it started again, and we got to a garage. It was a Hudson, and we were able to get to the Hudson garage. Oh. Well, come to find out, the nice little mechanic had put the bearings in backwards.
Oh.
And they had burned out again, so we had to have that all done all over. And there was a convention in town, and I said, well, we can probably find a place to stay with the YW. Well, there wasn't even a place to stay at the YW, but they recommended this woman who didn't take in roomers. And so we went to her house, and we were able to get a room to stay the night. And I forgot to tell you about the most interesting thing was that going over the Great Divide, we had a flat tire and a blowout. And we were, this very nice Air Force captain stopped, and he was able to get some air in the one tire and change the other one. and so we started for Albuquerque again, and then we started to have engine trouble. So we stayed with this woman, and she was very, very nice, and she had three collies. She was probably in her 50s, and she had never had children, but she just adored those three collies. Anyway, the big thing was we had to go to the OPA and get certificates proving that we needed tires in order to, and then we had to find the tires.
What's the OPA?
Well, it was one of the government organizations, you know, they all had initials.
Right.
And we did get the certificates, and we did get the tires, and we brought them to the garage where the car was being fixed, and they were able to put the one on and the other one for a spare. And once again, we started out for the East Coast, and everybody was waving goodbye. And off we went, and we had no more car trouble. We had no more car trouble at all. We didn't travel very far every day, and I was doing a little driving just to kind of get the feel of it, but I was a little hesitant to drive somebody else's car anyway when I didn't really know how. Well, we were in touch with Bruce and David by telephone, and David was just worried sick. Bruce thought it was funny.
He had a sense of humor.
Oh, yeah. He thought it was very funny. He said, you're going to be talking about this for the rest of your life.
That's right.
So anyway, we got in to Port Deposit, Maryland on the 10th of November, which was the Marine Corps birthday. And it was really my first official experience in the Marine Corps. And Bruce was in charge of the program because he was the senior officer there. And so we hosted the Marine Corps birthday ball, and it was exciting to me. I didn't really have the clothes to dress up or anything, but you know, it was so wonderful to be with Bruce.